Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage, the remote version of the podcast. I'm Chet Haas from the Developer Relations team.
I'm Tor Norby from the Android Studio team.
I'm Romain Guy from the Android Toolkit team.
And today we have three guests from all over the world. Who are they?
I guess dramatic I'm pause. Start.
Yes.
I'm Adrian Roos from the Android Window Manager team.
I'm Torim Chaggy from the Android Window Manager team as well in Zurich.
I'm Tarandeep Singh from Android Input Method Editor team from Mountain View.
So input method editing and window manager must mean we're talking about IME animations, one of the very cool features in Android 11. Maybe start with an overview of what that is.
It's kind of two things. So one part of it is that the input method or keyboard or whatever you want to call it. In R, we are adding a new way to animate the transition when the keyboard comes in. That's one part of it. And the other part is we're changing up the window inset system a bit. So we give developers a lot more detail about what kind of insets there are instead of just having them all mashed into a single inset that might be due to a bunch of different things.
Okay, so I'm curious to dive into details on both of those. Why don't we start with the IME animation itself? I know that this was a oft-requested feature from outside, but also from inside. I think a lot of us on the team have wanted this kind of capability for a while, where you could basically solve a hard problem, which is get two different processes to talk to each other about the animations that are happening on the screen. And so what was the problem that we had to solve, I guess? Or maybe why was that so hard? Why couldn't we do this before?
So I think one of the main issues was previously that even Surface Flinger didn't have synchronization between the Surface position updates as well as pushing new frames from applications. And that was added about 3-4 years ago, I think, into Surface Flinger. So the problem we solved back then was that when you had a video on screen and in a list, for example, and you're scrolling up and down on that screen, the video would also move with it, but the movement was not fully synchronized with the application. So you would see a little bit of jitter or like some small artifacts around the video because it was not moving in sync.
It worked really well for like foreign films where the audio was also out of sync with the subtitles. So I think maybe that's what they were going for.
And this was one of the reasons why we have Texture View, because Texture View has other issues but didn't suffer from that, because the compositing of Texture View is handled by the UI toolkit and not the window manager.
Right.
I think, was this also related to the text selection handles, because those were separate windows as well and they could not synchronize with the content on the screen as well? So I think that was fixed in the same fix. It was, yeah, what was the release? I don't know, N or something.
Did we actually fix that?
I thought so. Or at least we gave the ability to synchronize across windows. I hope
yes,
so.
Yes, we have the ability, but I'm not sure whether we covered all the use cases yet. And I think text handles may be one of the things we haven't covered yet, but I'm not sure. But when we discovered that we have this ability now to properly synchronize Surface property updates with frame buffer updates, we kind of, based on this principle infrastructure, we built new features in Window Manager, which was first the synchronized app transitions between the home screen and the opening application. So what that did essentially is we were able to synchronize movement of content within the home screen, for example, an icon that moves up with the actual Surface. So we built new infrastructure in Window Manager that was based on the Surface Flinger infrastructure to synchronize the app transitions, like app opening animation, app closing animation. The other big area is obviously gesture navigation, which we built in the last release. All of these features were based on that Surface Flinger component to synchronize Surface position updates with buffer updates, essentially. And after we finished up the synchronized animations project for Launcher, we thought about how we can expand this and enable even more synchronization for other use cases. And One that came to mind was obviously the IME, which was like a huge pain point for many, many, many years. And we realized that we can use the exact same infrastructure by essentially giving the application that currently has the IME focus control over the IME surface properties, but not the surface itself. So you, the app can actually move the IME around and synchronize that with its own content, but it doesn't have access to the buffer content, so it cannot screenshot it.
We're saying IME. We're talking in practice for most people about the keyboard, right? Keyboard.
Yes, soft keyboard, sorry. So yes, we realized that we can give the app control over the surface without violating any security principles around the IME, right? And it's also easy to revoke the control. We built like a system such that we can revoke control as needed, such that when you open another application or you go to the home screen, the app that had control over the IME previously has no longer control anymore because we can just revoke that control in a secure way. And so it's okay to give the app control over the IME surface, but only for a limited amount of time while the application has the IME focus. And that's how we got here, essentially. That's how we enabled the synchronized IME animations by giving the app process that it has currently the IME focus, giving it control over the surface handle for the actual IME, and letting it drive surface position updates to move the surface up and down as it would move like a video up and down in its own process.
So I'm curious, one of the things I remember, like I know this has been in the works for at least two, I think maybe three releases by at least some of the people I see in this current meeting. And it almost hit Android 10. And then it got sort of pulled out at the last minute because of, do you remember? Like, so what are the changes? What made it difficult to actually integrate in at that time? And then what changed since then so that it could come out in DP2 of Android 11?
I think a big part was just that we were just not done yet. Like we didn't have all the cases covered. Large parts just did not work yet. And we did the synchronized transitions for gesture navigation in last release, but that was kind of a simple problem because you only have two parties. You have the launcher and you have the thing that's getting launched. But with IME, you have the soft keyboard, which maybe any third-party application, you have the IME framework, and you have potentially a number of apps. Like if you have two apps on screen, for example, in split screen, it's not quite clear which app should get control over the IME then, right? So
is that because there can only be one? So you couldn't, yes, for example, have both apps pull up their own keyboards?
Say that again?
I mean, would it be possible in split screen to have each app pull up their own keyboard?
No, there's only one keyboard always. This case was just a lot more complex to figure out how that arbitration works and making sure all the cases work.
So I want to go back to something.
It looked like Taran was trying to say something.
Oh, yeah. I was gonna send it over to Taran, but yeah, go ahead. Good segue.
Additionally, there were like, you know, since the platform APIs for IMEs were lacking in terms of like you're not able to query what is the visibility of the IME, or not able to query will the IME actually show on the screen or not? So things like that. And because of this, a lot of application developers, they came around their own hacks. And now that we are building new APIs, we want to make sure each one is compatible with all the hacks that most apps are trying to achieve. For example, like certain apps would create a transparent layer on top of, they will create a transparent activity just to monitor the insets and try to synchronize the IME animation to their own views. And this kind of hacky behavior was working, but we really need to make sure that we don't break those use cases. And that also took a significant amount of time in the current release.
So you were able to do that? You can actually have the new system work with apps that are doing crazy things to try to trick the IME?
We tried to find all the hacks that were happening across different apps, and we were able to tackle as far as we could see.
Okay. Sort of popping the stack a few frames here. What are the main use cases for developers for this? Like, what are the things they're trying to do in their app where they want to animate the IME?
I think the number one use case we see where this makes a lot of sense with something that is kind of a long list and scrolls. And the thing that comes to mind there is chat apps, right? So there's actually two parts to this whole thing. First, we built a way to synchronize transitions when the IME comes in with app content. But the second part is also letting the app actually drive the exact transition that's going on. So when you bring in the keyboard in a chat application, you can now do that driven by the user's touch input. So you could, for example, build an experience where you can overscroll into the keyboard.
I think my feeling was like, yeah, it's obviously sort of a common problem that people are trying to solve in chat apps, but just like applications overall, I think we're looking for a way to make it just the experience of bringing up and exiting the keyboard less janky, right? So it's not so much a specific use case as let's make the UI not suck, right? Because there was no way to avoid the problem where the keyboard animates in and the application jumps because all it did was get a single update saying, and now you have to be this size. And there's no way to react to that in a really positive way in a world where, you know, everything is smoothly animating on the screen, except when the keyboard pops in, and then they really couldn't do anything about it. They couldn't know when it was coming in. They couldn't know the timing of the animation that it was using. And all they could do was react sort of after the fact and snap into place. Did you remember what else you were going to say on that, or did that capture it, Adrian?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Well, so I wanted to go back to something Tor had mentioned earlier, maybe for the people that had the same question Tor did. Why do we call it IME? Like, internally, we call it IME, but really it's the keyboard. People think of it as the keyboard. It's obviously a framework that allows more than soft keyboard entry, but maybe someone from the keyboard team should say, here's why we call it this.
I think it's supposed to be called input method framework, but everybody just calls us IME.
Okay, but why input method? Like, I think most people think of this thing as the keyboard that is coming in and out, but it really is more than that. It's about input, right? It's about input beyond the soft keyboard. It's the framework that allows input to come in, whether it's coming in from that soft keyboard or another application or a different kind of input.
Yeah, overall. It might not even be keyboard, right? It might be one big microphone where you talk to it, or it might be like a drawing pad where you're writing out the letters with your finger.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, IME means input method editor specifically, and I think that term was coined by older operating systems, which we just inherited, if I remember correctly.
Actually, Roma, you were on the toolkit team when this thing came in, right? Animated in.
Yes. What about it?
I just wondered whether you wanted to correct any of our assumptions here since you were here at the time.
No.
Nope. All right, then. All right. So you talked about being able to control the transitions. As I understand it, there's two elements of that. One is there's now a listener API where you can find out what the keyboard is doing, but there's also another API that allows you to drive it. Right? Can you speak to either one of those? Is that basically the same underlying mechanism? Or is there anything different going on in those two channels?
Right. So with the listener works for both channels, essentially. With the listener, you get just regular animation callbacks. Like, you get told when it starts, you get told when the values change, and you get told when it ends. Then there's the API to actually drive the thing. And that one is actually also what we use internally when the framework drives the inset animation. So whenever the IME shows up and it's the framework doing it, then we use the same exact mechanism to drive that transition, and you get the listener invoked. And same if your app drives it, exactly the same happens. Like, the listener gets invoked, but just with the values that you provide instead of whatever the framework would be doing.
And then on the application side, so that's sort of the IME side. That's, you know, as it animates in. But then on the application side, you need to work with insets. I guess this goes to the other part of what you're talking about, was more extensive insets for applications to use to what size and position themselves. Can you talk to that?
Right. So in window insets is it's the mechanism we use to tell applications about where weird systemy stuff is occupying their screen. Previously, we just had one inset for everything, and that was accounting for the status bar, for navigation bars, for the IME, for some other things that happen on other form factors than phones. And that just really didn't scale if you want to respond in a targeted way to things changing on screen. So in Android 11, we are splitting out all the insets by what is actually causing them. So we have an inset for the IME, we have a separate one for the status bar, for the navigation bars, and you can respond to each of those in a targeted way.
So when you say insets, do you mean the location sort of rectangle size of these things? Like what specifically, what's the information you're getting about the status bar?
You're essentially getting it's kind of like a drawer, so to speak. Like you get the length that it overlaps with your window from either side. And that information is kind of, it's a bit weird at first glance because you don't really get told where exactly it is. You only get told how much it overlaps with your window. And the reason it is that way is because at the time you're trying to use this information as an input to your layout process, essentially, you don't actually know where your stuff is yet. So the way this is kind of intended to be used is as paddings you apply to your views in the hierarchy, if that makes sense.
And are these intended to be used sort of transiently during an animation, like you change the values in your app until you land on like some real layout? Like I'm thinking some of the view properties that we added were really more about, you know, translation X should be used during an animation, but otherwise it should mostly be zero. So our application's looking at this and then they're adjusting some sort of inset values on their own app until they end up at their final layout when they, as you said, when they know where their stuff is?
I mean, there's a bunch of ways to use this. You, during the transition, you just get told what the overlap is for the current frame. And at the same time, we also, so there's essentially two listeners for insets. There's the existing on-apply window insets listener, which tells you what the final state is of the insets. And new in this release, there's going to be a listener that tells you that an animation is happening. And this one has the intermediate values for each frame. And there's a bunch of ways to use this. One way is kind of to do something like a scene transition with it. So you, when the animation starts, you get the insets for the end state in the on-apply window insets listener. And that lets you essentially do the layout as normal, and you record the values there. And then during the animation, which plays afterwards, you can use the post layout translation X, translation Y, that kind of thing, to animate from the position you have before layout to the position you have after layout. Right. That's kind of one way to use it.
So that sounds like the way we handle transitions in general, right, Chet?
Yeah. Figure out where you're going and then kind of roll everything back and animate from where it started.
Right. Or the other way to do it is to kind of delay the layout delay applying the inset while the animation is happening, which gets a bit more complex to handle, but it works around some issues we otherwise have with clipping with, for example, Recycle View, which then just doesn't render all the stuff that would be off screen, but now isn't because of the transition.
So delaying, I played around with delaying or sort of stubbing out some layout stuff in the middle of, in the bowels of transitions. And it tends to be tricky because when some other player comes in from left field and causes a similar thing, then it's kind of hard to react to everything going on in the system because you don't necessarily have control over all that. I don't know if the same is true here. Like if you're trying to basically cause the wind sets to not change or cause that particular layout to not happen, is there something else like, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, the status bar got larger for some reason on a particular form factor, and then your app had no way of reacting to that? Or is this not that general case?
Right. So this is kind of one of the reasons why we split up the insets by type. So you can kind of only do a targeted delay of the keyboard insets and not have all the other kinds of insets affected. It's certainly a bit more complex than the other approach, which just works. We've been able to make it work pretty well.
And we also
guarantee
you that during the animation, there's only at most one animation going on for a specific type, and the size stays constant during that animation. So in case there will be a status bar size change, when you're animating it, you actually delay that and then jump at the end. We could even run a second animation for this, you know, size change animation, but that's not yet implemented.
And we can guarantee that even for third-party IME applications?
Yes.
They're going to obey that behavior?
Because all the information flows over Window Manager, essentially.
Yeah.
And, sorry, I mean, we can guarantee that for the what the application sees. We cannot prevent the IME from doing what it's doing, right? We cannot intercept its drawing in a different size. But at least from a developer perspective, for these like rare use cases, you would still see a jump, and maybe it's not fully aligned with the IME, but it's not going to cause bugs in your code because of the guarantees we give what you see about the insets happening.
Okay.
Because it's not the same thing what the actual insets are and what the application sees it, right? Because this could be different.
So when we started talking about this externally, one of the first questions that we got was one of the first questions that I asked when you were showing me the demo a while ago, which was, how about Android X? And the answer is, yeah, we can't make all this stuff work in unbundled libraries. Can you explain why? Right, because clearly people have been wanting this for a while. What they'd really like to do is have this capability on all the releases where their app ships. I agree. On the other hand, what are the pieces of this? I assume the answer involved Window Manager that, you know, yeah, there is no physical way that we could actually make that work on earlier releases.
Yeah, we didn't have any. So the information was essentially missing, right? So the Window Manager was sending the inset information to the app client process, but when it sent it, the information was already swamped together and like compressed in this one single system insets field. So we didn't have the insets for status bar, navigation bar, and IME. However, what a lot of app developers ended up doing is like, oh, if it's a large bottom inset, then that's likely the IME, you know, and if it's a top inset, that must be the status bar, right? So a lot of app developers have been doing that already, and we are thinking about providing these kind of hacks in a more, you know, standardized way in an Android X library that will use the newest information when it's available, like the actual information from the system when it's running on Android 11. But it's when you're running on older platforms, at least the way it uses these hacks is like in a reliable way, and we actually have framework code that sometimes assumes navigation bar is either, if it's left top, sorry, if it's left bottom or right, then it's a navigation bar. So we can just, you know, we can just provide this to the apps as well. But what's not available is obviously the animation stuff, right? Because we had to build new capability for capability for the applications to synchronize these animations, and there is no way to backport that essentially. For the animation part, we think we could fake it because when the inset is changing, yes, we can assume this is an animation, right? So we could potentially say, provide a way to say, well, if you're running on an old platform, it's not going to be synchronized, but some animation is better than no animation in that case, right? But when you're running on the latest Android version, you have full synchronization.
Seems reasonable to me that, you know, you'd want developers to just have to implement call one library, and maybe on some versions it doesn't do anything, but at least when it's available, it works. As right. opposed to relying on every developer doing, you know, conditional SDK greater than 30 and all that.
Yeah, and that's traditionally what we want to do in Jetpack, right? If there are behaviors we can backport, we will, but otherwise at least we can give you a way to target a single API and hopefully gracefully degrade. And in that particular situation, we could argue on the definition of gracefully, but at least you won't be worse than before, I suppose.
Yeah, and if you don't mind putting some hacks in, it's probably better to have the hacks in a library than to have it evened out in all apps, right? Because at least then there's a chance that when users get to a later version, that library picks up the correct behavior as opposed to having only the hack forever.
Right. And so I assume we have samples, right, showing how to use those new APIs. Like, I have seen myself demos that use, I assume, Recycler View, but do we provide samples for other kinds of views, you know, scroll view, custom view? For instance, what would a game do with their custom GL rendering?
Oh, I don't know how many samples we have, but I do know that Chris Baines posted a sample just last week that covers the basics of using the API. I doubt it was gaming specific stuff, but yeah, I don't know. Have you seen any other app developers out in the wild playing with it yet? Or are you too busy fixing bugs as we come up to final release?
I think there was some response to Chris Baines's tweet where he showed the sample. Like some people seem to be, you know, picking it up, playing with it a bit, finding all the issues it still has.
Are there any apps from Google or otherwise that you really wish would? And I don't know if you need to name them, right? But have you filed bugs or requests with some of your favorite apps to please use this to improve the usability?
Yes.
Good. Right.
In fact, we have
completely correct answer.
Yeah, we have.
In fact, we have got in touch with a lot of chat related apps, and they are looking into APIs. So we should hope to see some implementations.
Are there any non-chat major use cases you could think of where the developers might not have realized that this would be good for them?
I think anything really that makes prominent use of the keyboard, text editors, email clients, anything like that could probably benefit from at least synchronizing their content using the listeners, if not driving the transition themselves.
What about the web scenario? I think the thing that I find, what I like about many Android apps is that if I'm entering, for example, an email address, they've already tagged the input type as email, so I get the right keyboard that has like the at sign somewhere on it, right? But sometimes when I'm using, you know, either you know, I'm actually in Chrome on my phone, or if it's like a lightweight wrapper around a web renderer, they don't do that. The keyboard integration is kind of weak, so they haven't typed the data, and so I'm just getting a generic keyboard. And I'm wondering if there's something we could do there to make sure that a web page with a text field also makes good use of this API.
I think that would be up to the input type to be propagated from WebView. If that happens, then we can do this. But in general, if the app is trying to synchronize its WebView contents using an API, that can be done.
Yeah, and I didn't mean specifically the input type. I realize it's hard if the underlying markup does not indicate what kind of data it is. You're kind of screwed. But I was more thinking that it would be nice at least if we could do a better job animating the keyboard in on web pages now. You know, if the browser has that freedom to leave the text field closer to where the keyboard is.
I assume that's up to the Chrome app or whatever the browser
app. Yeah, this was a thinly veiled, you know, question about have you talked to the Chrome team about this?
He was just asking, have you filed a bug against Chrome? That's all. I was wondering, I had another feature suggestion, which is I've always hated entering stuff into the keyboard when it's in landscape mode, because the keyboard completely takes over the screen, just like, you know, dealing with the constraints that it has there. It's just not a great experience. Now
but
that we have the ability to sort of smoothly animate it, could you just animate it into portrait mode and make me never have to type in landscape mode ever again?
See, because I'm the opposite, because I like the space, because it makes the keys bigger.
Then it's inconsistent. No, sorry, you're wrong.
We internally had some.
You can't see the rest of the content that you're typing into. It's like you can choose one. You can either choose the input or the output, but not both.
I think the landscape layout we have is kind of it. I mean, it originated from I think Android 1.5 when it introduced the soft keyboard, right? And back then, screens were tiny. So in landscape, the only reasonable thing to do was to fill up the entire screen with the IME. That's not the case anymore, I think, because... But however, that's still the default from the times back then, and we haven't changed that, unfortunately. But I think that's something we can look into for a future release. Like, no.
Taran, you were going to say something as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The same idea that we had a couple of ideas around this. Like, can we get rid of the full screen mode totally? Can we make it look better? Because it's kind of a separate implementation than rest of input method editors.
Yeah, the latest build is a crashing system UI when I'm trying to go into landscape mode. So, but it is like it's like a daily build. It's not something we push to users.
So what did we forget to ask about? What were you really hoping to talk about today? And we just kept not asking that question.
Well, are there specific best practices around using this API? Like, are there things that you should never do, things that you should do, any particular consideration regarding performance, for instance?
Do not lay out for every animation frame. You could do that because you can just, you know, set the padding and then you'll cause a layout. You can do that. And we actually tried it out. In some applications, it kind of works on the most high-end devices, but anything on the lower end or any complex application, do not do that. I think personally, it would be better to just jump instead of a really janky animation. So please don't do that.
Yeah,
that's hilarious. We have been telling people that since 1.0 or before.
Yes. Animating layouts is very difficult, and you'll see if you can slow down animations in a lot of apps, not even just on Android, you'll see there's a lot of cheating going on. I know that text is an area that's very difficult to animate as well because it's very expensive to relayout the text. So yes, please do not animate your layout unless you have a very simple view hierarchy.
So I think this is exactly what Adrian was talking about earlier, where you can figure out where you're going to, and then you can use the intermediate, the post layout values like translation X to animate instead, because those do not depend on layouts for you to set those values. So then basically you're doing a single layout at the beginning to figure out where you're going. And then all you're doing is animating values that change where things are displayed. I think in particular, like, yes, we have been telling people to not animate layouts forever, but this is really the worst case scenario because by definition, you're animating the entire window's contents, right? So as you change the insets, if you're doing real layouts on every frame, you're basically causing your entire hierarchy to go through the request layout and layout and measure pass on every single frame. So yeah, pretty awful.
Yes, there's another reason why this is really bad, because now you're controlling the IME, right? And it's fully synchronized, but it also means it's synchronized with your jank. So we actually did some protection. So if you don't synchronize with it, we run it on another thread. So you don't have to worry about it if you don't care about the API. But if you decide to use the API, we then synchronize it with your main thread. So make sure that your main thread stays responsible during these animations. Otherwise, you will jank, and you will not just jank your app, you will also jank the IME animation. That's nice.
You're dragging the system server down with you.
No, it's not in system server. It's not in system. It's isolated in the app process, but still, it's like, yeah, the IME is not moving anymore if the application is not submitting transactions to Surface Flinger.
And kind of related to that, it's not just performance best practices now, it's also UX best practices. We're essentially giving your app complete control over the intermediate states of the IME. So you can really, you know, if you want to, you can have the IME showing half on screen. Not sure why you would ever do that, but it's kind of now the responsibility of your app to make sure that you have a sensible transition there.
Yeah, and we're actually also thinking hard about what kind of libraries we can provide in Android X to make these scenarios easier where you would want to control the IME. One case that comes into mind is like the sample that Chris Baines actually posted on Twitter, where you can move the IME with your finger as you're like overscrolling the list. We were actually surprised by how complex the code turned out. So we are currently thinking about how we can, you know, wrap this behavior all into like libraries maybe, or like a, you know, in Android X, for both make it easy for developers. That's one angle. But the other angle is also UX consistency, right? Because now you have full control and the platform APIs are built in a way that these are very, very low level. But with great control comes great power, And so it becomes easy to screw that stuff up. So we need to make it easy to do the right thing for applications. And the best way to do that is to provide libraries.
One thing Adrian said about showing half the keyboard sort of got me intrigued. I feel like when I'm using, you know, a chat app, it's not showing the keyboard. So I have to like tap on the text field, wait a second, and then the keyboard comes if I'm lucky. It would be great if I could like just sort of show it, but like peeking from below the screen, and it's just kind of sitting there. And I would just with my finger drag it up when I want to use it, instead of like having to like give focus to the text field and wait for it. I don't know if that would be work in practice, if I can have the keyboard sort of sitting around like that. But if I could, I think that might be kind of a nice UI. No need to respond.
So many feature requests.
Oh, that was I a feature. And actually, the hacks to pre-warm the keyboard in that way.
Yeah. One person's hack is another person's feature request. Actually, speaking of feature requests, this was one of the top things that I've heard people complain about over the years. Like, we want an API for this. Now that you've given it to them, you know, is there like a top 10 most wanted list, you know, for the Android SDK for things that we need to support APIs for? And if you've taken care of number one, what is number two? What is next? Without promising any delivery day, obviously.
I think, I mean, we can only speak for our team because we don't know too much what else is going on in the framework. But personally, and I don't want to promise anything, but personally, what really annoyed me back when I was an Android developer was all these activity intent flags. If anybody can relate to that.
Yes, when or even just the window manager flags. I remember like when doing, implementing pop-up window, just trying to figure out which flags to use. Thankfully, I had Diane available, but yes, we have a lot of flags.
Yes. I think, and actually, I mean, we made progress on that front already because SysMI flags are now fully deprecated. No more SysMI flags.
Also, your sort of top 10 wanted list for APIs is to delete some APIs.
Yes.
I see.
Not delete it, but replace them with something more sensible and do not use flags. Like, using flags is the worst because you encode a certain behavior into like a flag, right? And then you have some Java documentation, but the documentation is usually out of date. And
yeah, I mean, it is bad, but there is something worse. And I'm thinking of the wake locks. So at least when we went from wake locks to putting a flag, at least we got the ability of, hey, the system manages the wake locks for you. So when this thing is on the screen through a flag, we will not turn your screen off. Stale wake locks was a pretty big problem in the old days, pre-flags.
Right. No, I'm not saying all flags are bad. But flags that encode a complex behavior are bad.
Yes.
And we had lots of these in the window. We still have lots of these in Window Manager, but we got rid of all SysMI flags and like stuff like flag layout hide navigation and flag layout full screen, which were like so confusing for everybody. And now we replaced it with a much simpler concept of you can indicate to your window whether you want to fit the root windows, the fit insets, or whether the window should fit for you the insets on the root level, and otherwise you just get the insets. It's just a simple boolean now. But we are.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think this is a multi-year journey of evaluating all the flags we have in Window Manager and Activity Manager, and see how we can replace the flags that have really complex behavior baked in with a new system for which we give developers control over it in a much more direct manner.
It's sort of the same thing we're doing on the Android X side with, like, in the beginning it was like, hey, let's build up a platform that's fully capable, and now it's like, hey, let's make development simpler.
It's both, right? It's the new, I think the new principle we have is you build the APIs in a very low level manner. But then you iterate on the Android X side, right? And what it allows you to is to essentially backport all the improvements you made on Android X, backport to all the platforms where the more low-level construct is available, right? And this will also make it easier for compatibility, because the chance that you actually need to change these low-level constructs is much lower, because they're so low-level that you can encode, or you can have them behave as you want to, right?
Right.
The thing that I was thinking about when Tor asked what else you wanted to fix is it usually comes up in the same paragraph with IME animations, which is, what about that screen rotation thing? So that's always been on my list of like, oh, could we make that a little smoother? So I think of that in the same paragraph because it similarly like spans multiple processes and windows and services and seems like a really hard problem to solve. But boy, that'd be cool. I don't even know really what you have in mind because it's so complicated what's going on. Like you're asking things to change to a new orientation with different constraints. Like, well, nothing's quite the same size. So what is it you're looking for?
It could be a totally different layout.
Yeah. And then, you know, so how do we get from here to there? But That'd be nice. Can I add that to the list?
Yes, and I think it relates list, right? At the end of the day, it relates to this project because it is about windows changing size or, you know, content changing size, reacting to changes in the system, right? Split screen is another use case, and I think I feel that like IME is a starting point, and that we can expand from here and, you know, attack all these different use cases one by one, and also. Yeah. But I think a big part of that is also the Android X story, like the view story, because animating between two different layouts is not that easy currently. And I have high hopes for Jetpack Compose actually to fix some of these issues to make it really easy for applications to react to size changes much more seamlessly.
Compose will fix everything.
I think that's the takeaway from the conversation today. Speaking of which, I'm all out of questions. Anybody else? Have we explained everything to the fullest detail?
Go read the source code.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.